Welcome to Baby Boomers Live, the show about all things human from a baby boomer's perspective. All things hot and all things not. News, reviews, interviews, chat, sex, and what's next. And here are your hosts, Reetha Gray from Betty White's Out There Rockers, and Easy Dad, Jim Zulie.
I'm on. Hello, hello. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. And here we are at Baby Boomers Live. And we are on November 24, 2014. And my co-host Reetha Gray is on vacation, taking a break. So, good for her, taking the day off for a cruise. Well, good for you, Reetha. I was going solo, but my son surprised me today with an unexpected co-host, and I'm so excited to have her on, a legend in the world of filmmaking, someone my son and I are fans of. She's worked at Disney and Universal and wrote the sequel to Land Before Time, to name just a few. Dev Ross. Dev, are you on with me?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Hello, Dev. Welcome.
Hello?
Welcome to our Baby Boomers Live show, and thanks for jumping on board with me today.
It was fun jumping.
Yeah, that time goes so fast. I mean, it's you hang up the phone, and all of a sudden it's Monday again, and I can't believe it. You know.
Yeah. I can't believe I'm a baby boomer.
You know, there's a lot of us. You know, when you read the statistics, it's amazing. I mean, so many people. And we've done so many reports, and all of a sudden here we are, and everybody says the same thing. I can't believe I'm a baby boomer. I'm close to or in retirement, and you know, and here we are. And I don't know if you've listened to some of the past shows, but you know, it's just amazing how, and you know, I've given a lot of the statistics out, and so many of us just weren't ready. We made the plans when we were 30 or 40 years old, and this is the way it's going to be. And, you know, like I said, if you want to give God a laugh, tell him your plans. you know, it's a lot of things we didn't anticipate. And but, right. You know, I'm just glad to have you on board today.
Thank you.
And, you know, I know that you've had quite a past, too. We'll go into that later. But has it been that way for you? I mean, you're not retired, though. You're still pretty late. You're still going strong.
Well, you know, I'm at that point. It's my birthday today.
Oh, that's right. Happy birthday, Dev.
Thank you. And everybody has been asking me, well, are you going to, you know, are you going to take your Social Security? Because I turned 62 today. And it's had my head spinning because I feel like I just started. I just feel like I'm just now really getting good at what I do, and I just see another 40 years ahead of me that I want to work. So the idea of taking my retirement has just been boggling my mind. And I think a lot of it is, for me, is it's just a mindset. We grow up when, you know, we get into our 60s, people start talking about retirement. And that's the modeling that we've had. But if I take that away and I look at me and my energy and what's just going on in my life, I feel that I'm just now getting productive. Getting ready to do the good stuff. The other stuff was just a warm-up. Now I'm
That's the magic bullet. You said it right there.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
What, you know, the statement of, instead of having that idea, well, oh, geez, I've lived my life and now I'm not really needed or whatever, and I'm just going to fade into retirement, you know, and, you know, the scenario of, well, you're entrenched and you're just stagnant and so on. This is exactly what you said is the key, because you got to think of, it's like, this is a new start. Now, we haven't really lived our life yet. We're just getting started. And the thing is, you have so much experience behind you. Now you can go forward with making a few less mistakes, which is, in my case, a little less costly. I don't mind making a mistake.
Well,
I just don't know why it has cost so much.
I have made some serious mistakes, and I am fortunate to live to tell about them and to giggle about them now. But back then, you know, there were times where I thought my life was over. I made such bad mistakes. And now that I know that I can live through them, that I can, you know, that you do live another day, and now I have mistakes to look back on, and to know that they, you know, they don't end your life.
They're stepping stones.
They don't even enter your career unless you choose that. And so now I can go forth and I can, you know, if I write something and it fails, I go, oh, well, next. Whereas back then, oh, my God, they didn't like it. Oh, my God, my career's over. No, it's not. You just go to the next thing. And I just don't take things as serious. I honest to God, I've gotten to the point where I don't care what people think about me. Yeah, sure, I care a little bit, but it's not going to stop me. Because as humans, we care about what other people think about us. But the opinions of others are not going to stop me. I'm going to do what I want to do because I get it now. I get it. You know, for all we know, we only have one time at the rodeo, and I want to ride.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, you know, it's the thing is, there's just so much we can people don't realize there's so much that's out there, but by the time you get to a certain point, and a lot of the people you know maybe have gone, they're moved or whatever, and let's continue this on. I think we're timed for a commercial break.
Okay.
And we'll continue with our baby boomer chats.
Innovation, philanthropy, consciousness, and commerce collide with Hollywood at the 2015 Ascent Expo at the Los Angeles Convention Center on February 27th through March 1st.
Yep.
Get your company, product, idea, or cause exposed at this historic event, featuring beauty, fashion, art, and music on an enormous center stage with 50 electrifying performances, tens of thousands of people, and a star-studded red carpet. Experience an overwhelming flow of potential customers, clients, business partners, collaborators, and investors. Prime exhibitor space and sponsorships are selling fast. Visit AscentExpo.com. That's AscentExpo.com.
Well, Dev, I'll tell you, we can go on for this for hours because it's such an interesting topic. But I think we have our guest coming on now. Dale, are you on?
Yes, I am.
Hello, Dale. Dale, welcome to the show, Dale Ferguson. We have our co-host with us today, Dev Ross.
Hi, Deb.
Hi, Dale. Welcome.
Well, I'll tell you, Dale's been a friend of mine. He's a fellow Knight of Columbus, and, you know, 33 years, Dale, in the Air Force. You flew through three wars. You know, amazing. You know, what basically, you know, for everything you've been through, going back kind of the start, what gave you the drive to enlist in the first place?
I have a father that said, as soon as you graduate from high school, you're in the military.
And that was it. Okay.
That was it.
That's pretty inspirational.
And it's the smartest thing I ever did.
You know, Dale, Dev and I were just briefly chatting about the baby boomer scenario, and, you know, we're all sitting here, and it's hard to believe, poof, there goes 33. You know, my dad told me when I got on the fire department a long time ago, I was back in Chicago, he said 20 years goes by fast, and that was about, 38, 40 years ago, and here you are, but, you know, are you glad that you made that choice? Do you have any, you know, reservations that maybe if I didn't go in the military and spend 33 years doing this, anything like that? Is there other occupations you may have wanted to jump into?
No regrets. I have a grandson. I tried to get him to do the same thing, and he says, what? Join the military? I'll get killed. I said, no, you won't. You can get a college education in the military, and there are fields you can go into, and, you know, it'll help you in future jobs, which it does. I also had 34 years with the phone company, and as soon as they heard I was in the military, they figured, well, we don't have to worry about this guy being called up or anything because he's already done his time.
And Dev was... you know, she brought up a really interesting point, and this is kind of a key. is when we get to this state, you don't think, oh, well, here we are, retired, our life's over. You think, like, it's just beginning. I think that's really important, that we have so much behind us, so much experience and knowledge, and here we are, let's just start out now. And it gives you a younger state of mind, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Are you keeping busy with what you're doing now?
Oh, yeah. I have on my second book.
All right.
So that takes up a lot of my time, writing about my 33 years in the military. And I've got about 500 pages and lots of pictures, and that's way too much. It's too thick.
Well, do you think we can cover what's in the book in the next 10 minutes? What do you think? No. But okay,
I can't
so
talk
what,
that fast.
what well, brought you, you know, what aimed you towards the Air Force? I mean, you know, you had other choices.
Well, it's funny you should ask. I was in the eighth grade, and I was in my English class, and we had to write, you know, for learning how to do news stories. And I was into photography pretty heavy, and my dad was bragging about how well I could build models to this man who had a, you know, a single-engine aircraft. And he says, hey, you know, get him to build a model of my plane, and I'll take him up and fly him around, which I did. And he flew me all over Cincinnati, over the Ohio River into Kentucky, and he taught me how to fly, and I was in the eighth grade. Can
wow.
you believe that?
But you know no fear.
You what?
Eighth
no
grade,
fear.
You know no fear.
I didn't
because,
understand her.
Well, he said no fear, and, you know, it's funny you said that, Deb, because we were talking the other day, and you know, he has flown in three different wars. What was it, Dale? You had the Cold War, the Vietnam War, and then you had the Gulf War.
Right.
And I think it was in the Cold War you had mentioned that there were a couple scary times when you were up there. I imagine there was quite a few, but you mentioned one particular time you had. Now, it's nice to know who your neighbor is when you're up in the sky, especially if you're flying over some, you know, not so friendly areas. And you
yeah.
mentioned there was a time when you had actually 9 unknown aircraft in your area, right?
Yes, I was an air controller at that time, and I was in Newfoundland, and a lot of times the Russians would fly over the North Pole on their way to Cuba. So we never knew if it was them. And as it turned out, I'm plotting 9 aircraft, and you have to and they were unknown, so you have to scramble 2 fighters for each one. So now you have 18 fighters, and then you have to scramble the rescue, because over Newfoundland, if you go down in the water, you don't last very long. So it turns out
no.
we had we had some refueling aircraft in a racetrack pattern up north of the Cape. So we figured, gee, maybe this could be B-52s, and that's what it turned out to be. But we all thought, my God, this is it. This is World War III.
Oh, man.
And they asked me, do you want a relief? I was on the plotting board. And I said, no, I'd rather get it here than in the coffee room.
So, yeah, pick your spot. Yeah. A little
yeah.
bit on the nerve-wracking side, you know. I mean, now, you know, flying in these areas, I mean, you're flying over the North Pole and so on. Were there any particular aircraft that you found a little bit more comfortable? You've flown in just about every type there is. And there's probably a few that you dreaded because of the way they, a little in doubt, can they make it to my next location?
Yeah, I believe it was a KC-135, if I remember right. It was a C-135. But anyway, it was a refueling aircraft, and we were flying to Antarctica. And there's a midwinter airdrop we have to make. So you open the back door, and immediately you're about... It's about 30 degrees below zero, and you're pushing the cargo out the back. And this is for the people. See, you can't land in Antarctica in winter. If you do, you can't take off because your tires freeze to the ground, and then, of course, the engine's another problem. So it turns out there was a woman down there that had cancer, and she couldn't leave. They couldn't pick her up and couldn't go in and treat her. So... In with the cargo that we had was some of the drugs to treat her. Now, she was a doctor, and so she treated herself, and she lived long enough that she finally made it out of there. But you know, that in itself is quite a story.
Mm.
But
wow.
Anyway.
Yeah, because, all right, so that's what my point was. I mean, when you're up there and you have a particular issue, it's not like you can find a level strip there and land if you plan on taking off again. Forget it, right?
Right. Yeah, they don't land in the wintertime because then you're stuck there. It'd be a one-way trip.
So how long did that, how long were you over that mission in the Antarctic area?
What they do, they set two big oil barrels on fire, and that marks the drop zone. And it just so happened that one of our cargo pallets hit one of those. And it's the first time it ever happened. It hit one of those barrels, and there was a huge explosion, which was seen from everywhere. And, of course, it ruined all the stuff in the cargo pallet.
But I imagine.
Everything is duplicated. So when that happens, or if it's buried in a snowdrift, they always have the additional pallet. And there's hundreds and hundreds of eggs individually hand-wrapped, so that they won't break on when they land. But it goes down with a parachute, but they still hit, pretty good.
I imagine.
So that's quite an experience.
Well, you went through the period of what year was that when you were flying over the Antarctic and so on? That was back when, 50s?
No, it was more recent.
Okay.
Let's see. I would say it's probably in about the 60s, early 60s.
Okay. So you made it through. Now, after that, you found yourself taking a break, and then you're back, and you're in the Vietnam scenario there. Now, was it the same thing? Were you because I know that, Dev would find this interesting, you were a combat photographer. Now, was that when you were in the Vietnam War?
No, that was the Gulf War.
Okay.
What happened, I probably wasn't too clear, but I did the first hitch, and I got out because I wasn't happy because I wasn't making any stripes. Well, I thought, that was dumb. My parents live in Florida. I could have, flown down there in a military aircraft, a hop, and seen them. So then I get this letter in the mail from William Lyon. He was a major then, and he was a commander of a small group, and he was a big... he founded AirCal, and he's a multimillionaire, and he was starting up this 943rd Troop Carrier Group, and he sent me a letter inviting me to join his group. So I was supposed to meet him in Fullerton at the Civic Center, and he looks down at the record. He says, "Oh, I see you used to work in operations." I say, "Yes, sir." He says, "Well, I got a job for you." So he makes me the NCOIC of the command post at March Air Force Base, which was a big SAC base. Here was the Vietnam War starting. And you'd look out your door, and there's a big B-52 right there on the flight line. And in the morning, they take off, two at a time, holding hands, just next to one another. And all this black smoke is coming out. And they're going off, and they're going to be doing bombing raids up by Hanoi. It's the most incredible sight to see. These things have six engines each. It's eight engines. Eight engines, each B-52.
B-52s, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of weight to pull up.
Well, yeah, and they're carrying they don't carry the bombs, so they don't take off from here. They've landed some island like Tinian or something like they did in World War II, and that's where they load up with the bombs. And then they go in over Hanoi and drop bombs. But that was quite an experience.
Was that the Operation Niagara? Or I know Nixon had there's several names, and then Johnson came in and with the Hanoi raids. I forgot what the name was. But so how long were you flying over Nam? And did you do much photography there, Dale? Or
no.
That didn't start until the Gulf War.
We would fly in troops and cargo. I was never a bomber, in a bomber.
Yeah.
Although I had to take a, what do they call that? I had to take a special course so that I could get a chamber card. Yeah, it's called a chamber course.
Mm-hmm.
And they put you in a chamber. It's a big steel, looks like a giant capsule. And they start pumping the air out to see how long you'll last before you pass out. And you have a buddy, and he's got his mask on. And I thought, I'm determined. I was young then. I thought, I'm going to be the last guy, you know. And you have to count backwards out loud from 100 down to 1. See, so it's 100 and 98, 96. And you keep on counting. And the guy's watching you. See, if you get blue lips or, you know, there's a couple other things too. But there's signs when you're lack of oxygen right before you black out. And then when you black out, then he puts the oxygen mask on you. So anyway, I passed that, and I got a chamber card. That means you can catch hops on any kind of a fighter or bomber.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it is cool. And the reason I got it was because my mother was going in for a very delicate operation in her ear next to her brain, and my dad wanted me to come back there real fast if it got serious. So
okay.
And my commander says, well, we're going to fix it so you can catch a jet fighter back there all the way to Homestead Air Force Base in southern Florida.
Yeah.
Wow, what a trip.
Yeah, really.
Well,
it turned
out my dad never called me. He didn't want to, you know, worry me. I thought, oh, Dad, why didn't you call me? I was going to fly a fighter all the way back to Homestead.
That would have been kind of cool. A little bit different speed range there, but then you, now your photography started in the Gulf War. I just wanted to touch on that.
Right, right.
Okay. So were you a camera guy? I mean, or did you just kind of pick this up? Because that had to be kind of a new field for you.
I had a music teacher that taught me how to play a trombone, and he was also a ex-photographer in World War II, so he taught me all kinds of Life magazine secrets, such as taking a very slow black-and-white film that's only 100 ASA, that would be plus X, and you could push that all the way to 1,000 ASA just by putting it overnight in a container that has a little bit of liquid mercury on the bottom, and that mercury vapors super-sensitize the film. So he taught me a lot of neat stuff. And he was teaching me a lot of, other things, too, like how to interview people. So because of some unforeseen events, the public affairs officer one day asked me, hey, how would you like to come over and work for me in the public affairs office? And I said, sure, yeah, that'd be fun. And she knew I was a photographer, and she'd seen my pictures of the Pope and five presidents and the Queen Elizabeth and all that. So she figured that I could handle it, and I did.
Not bad. You probably had some interesting scenarios over the Gulf, but you know, you mentioned that you had Dev. Do you have any particular questions about the photography aspect of it? I know that's a little bit more your field.
Well, not exactly, but my you caught my interest right away, Dale, when you said second book. What's your first book about?
I'm having trouble hearing her.
Your first book? What was your first book about?
Okay, my
first
book.
What's your first book?
Yeah.
My first book was working for four bishops over 20 years. That's the Bishop of Orange. And I got into that because Tom Fuentes, who worked under the bishop and handled public relations, he asked me to take some pictures, and he was impressed. So then I was working for Tom. Whenever they would have a, what do they call that, when you become a priest, I photographed a lot of those.
Canonization?
Yes. And, when the Pope was coming to town.
Ordination. Yeah.
That's the funny story. Pope John Paul II. He was in L.A., and it was at a Catholic event because they had students from all the Catholic schools in the whole area, you know, Orange County, L.A. County. So I show up, and I go in there, and I went up to sit down in the press box because I had credentials that the bishop signed. So this was for the Diocese of Orange Bulletin. That's their monthly newspaper, daily.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm sitting there, and this Secret Service agent walks up the aisle, and he says, are you in a press pool? And I said, yeah. He looked at my badge. He says, no, you're not. In other words, you have to be from NBC, ABC, CBS, or LA Times, New York Times, you know, otherwise you're not in the press pool. So he says, you have a ticket? And I said, yeah. And he looks at the ticket, and he says, well, you're way up there. Nosebleed gallery. So I went up there and I thought, oh, great. And I looked through my, I just had a 100 to 300 millimeter telephoto. And I looked through it and I thought, no, this ain't going to work. So I'm either going to have it out with this guy or I'm not going to get pictures. So I was walking down the stairs. I said, hey, God, help me out here. So I hear this little voice behind me. Well, hello, Mr. Ferguson. I turned around. She looked vaguely familiar. She says, don't you remember you named your daughter after me? Her name is Timory. Very unique. And I was a youth leader at St. Clemens many years ago. And she was one of my charges. And she was about 13 then. And when I read her name off the roll and Timory, I thought, wow, that's a beautiful name. So I told her, I said, if we have another daughter, we're going to we're going to name her Timory. She was, really? And we had another daughter. We named her Timory. So here she is. She's a student at one of the Catholic high schools. And I told her, and she says, you look upset. What happened? I told her, and she reaches in her pocket, and she hands me a ticket. One of her students didn't show up. Cornelia Connolly.
Oh,
and
there
she's
you go.
A teacher
you can fill the gap.
She's a teacher, Cornelia Connolly. So I went back down there, and that chair was right across from the press pool, and I sat down, and here comes the same Secret Service agent. And he said, and he points his finger at me. He says, I thought I told you, and I just held up the ticket, and he says, oh, okay.
There you go.
Off.
You're in like Flint then. You know,
oh, yeah, I got some great pictures of the Pope.
Just real quick, we're going to go to a commercial, but I know you had lunch with Bob Hope, and I just want to touch on that, but we're going to break for a commercial real quick, so hang in there.
Okay.
Easy Way Broadcasting is the place to hear everything you need to know about entertainment and business. Now, you can see more about Eric Easy Zulli and all his connections through his online TV network, WTV Network. You can watch the latest videos and read the most up-to-date articles. Keep your eyes on WTV Network to see what's coming in the next few weeks. You'll see the newest web series and original talk shows. Follow Eric at Hollywood It Guy to find out what is new and what is happening in the upcoming weeks. For more information on WTV Network, go to www.thewtv.com.
Do you want a stronger internet presence and social media following for you or your business? Eric Easy Zulli and his company, Easy Way Entertainment, can help you get discovered. Go to www.easywaybroadcasting.com for prices and packages that can help you take control of your internet presence and gain marketing exposure.
Okay, all right, we're just touching base, and I mean, we could go on for both of you guys for hours, but Dale, what was the situation you had? I know there's a million other stories, but you, I remember you mentioned you had lunch with Bob Hope?
Yes, my commander, well, he told public affairs that they wanted pictures of Bob Hope because he was going to be at Norton Air Force Base, and he was going over for his last USO show or the last Christmas show. And he had been all the Christmas shows since 1941, World War II. So I said, sure, okay. So I went out to the base. This was December 22nd, 1990. And I came in the back gate, and I went to the, what do you call it? The hangar, you know, where everybody catches planes. And he was supposed to
terminal.
Be in the VIP room. And so he pulls up in his limo right outside on the flight line side. I thought, wow, nobody gets to do that. So he comes in, and I get pictures of him when he, you know, was greeted by the wing commander and the base commander. And then I went inside because they were processing him to go overseas. And the Air Force, all the militaries think so much of him that they give him his own plane. It's a big C-141 with an entire crew and eight, so they can feed him just like Air Force One. Well, anyway, after all the picture taking and everything, he sits down with having a cup of coffee by himself in the hangar, and everything is all roped off. They didn't want anybody in there. It was all sealed. I don't know how the word got out. I can't imagine.
Yeah.
But anyway, I walked by the table, and I said, Bob, I said, you mind if I join you? He says, sure, Sarge, sit down. So I sat across from him at this little table, and I told him how my daughter was a big fan of his. She saw him in, crazy thing? Yeah, Pale Face.
Oh, yeah.
That was funny in her neck. So then he was a big fan of hers. Well, she stood in line, about 20 years ago, and down in L.A. to have him sign his book, which was called, I think it's The Last Christmas Show, ironically.
All right.
Oh, yeah, so here I am going to The Last Christmas Show. But anyway, he gets real serious. He says to me, what do you think's going to happen? I said, we're going to war. And he looks down at his coffee, and he just said, oh, no. So
yeah.
He'd seen all the wars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, UFO shows.
Troops. Yeah.
Bob joined the Peace Corps Hope, right?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. But
what a guy.
Dale, you got so much. Now, how do we, do you have a site? Now, I was going to ask you all the pictures you have. I mean, which is there any way we can get some of the interesting pictures and maybe put them on our WTV site?
Well, I'm not into that after hearing about how people, you know, go into your computer and everything and take all the information about you. I kind of stayed clear of it. I'd be happy to give you some, and then you could just scan them in, you know.
Sure. Now, what are the names of your two books now?
Well, the first one is a photographic essay of the Diocese of Orange.
Okay.
And I did that to raise money for the retired nuns and priests.
Okay.
And yeah, they have a organization that's in Washington, D.C. And then my second book, of course, is called Combat Photographers Shoot Back. Now, that's a play on words. I shoot back with a camera. They shoot at me with a gun, you know.
Okay.
And on the cover, it's got me in the rear end of a C1 KC. It's a KC-135, and I'm photographing. It's a mid-air refueling. It's pretty dramatic because I'm looking out the back window, and there's a C-141. It's so close you could almost reach out and touch it, and they got the boom down. You know,
yeah.
Filling it with gas.
That stuff's so amazing. How they I was watching how they invented that scenario, and a guy wanted to break a record, and I don't know the specific stats on that, but he invented this scenario where a plane could fly over him and fuel him up so he could break the record for the longest flight. But anyway, Dale, I want to thank you for coming on the show, and I'd like to have you on again. It's such you have so much that you haven't even touched base with us on, but we will look forward to having you come around again. I want to thank you for our time, and Dev, I know that you didn't have a chance to say too much, but it was just interesting listening to him.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for having me.
Okay.
Now, hold on, Dev, don't go away now.
Okay.
Anyway, Dale, thanks again for being on the show, and we'll see you at our next meeting.
Okay. Take care, Jim.
All right.
Bye.
Okay, baby boomers, it's time for Jim from Jim.
Okay, my Jim today is Dev Ross, my co-host. Dev,
hi.
Interesting scenario, huh? I mean,
you talk about a life so completely different. He's flying airplanes, you know, during Vietnam, and I'm on the ground, you know, protesting the war. We were baby boomers at the opposite end of the political spectrum.
But you know, it's like what we were talking about in the beginning, and it's just so amazing when your kids, you look at your parents and you think they're eons away. And these increments of 10 years just kind of vaporize. I look at it as like that ball that goes around in the big funnel and it spins. And then as it gets closer to the center, it goes faster and faster. I feel like that's right. But that's not a good scenario. We have to think the way you were saying is we're just getting started, you know. And, you know, but just touching on base with you a little bit, you were with Disney and Universal, and like mm-hmm. I said, I'm a fan of yours. My son is. You had the sequel to Land Before Time, and mm-hmm. it was as a cartoon. It was so. I mean, we enjoyed it so much. You were kind of what you'd say. You were in the golden age of Disney, the heyday, I guess you'd say, right?
Yeah. I had no idea that there were so many fans and followers. And for instance, I worked on a show called Darkwing Duck at Disney, and I had no idea until just a few years ago, following, and there, since I left the show, there's been comic books, and now there's, the fans are screaming for a movie, and
see?
You know, they want the series brought back, and I had no idea.
You had no clue, yeah.
Not a clue, and then I was, I am in the improv acting world, and I was at a big improv festival in South Carolina, and called South. And my group, the head improv guy, the guy that, you know, I was just jonesing to be, stopped everything and said, "Didn't you write Darkwing Duck?" And then after that, it was all about me.
Yeah, see.
And I just couldn't believe it. I got swarmed, signing autographs, and I don't get it.
Well, no, I'll tell you what it is. All right, here's an analogy with songwriting. I mean, Satchmo, you remember old Satchmo, right?
Oh, God, yeah.
Well, I was a fan. I mean, when I was a little kid, I was a fan of Satchmo. And, you know, he had more than his music. I mean, you got to admit, the guy didn't have he didn't have a Bing Crosby voice. He had a harsh voice. And yet, with that voice, look at what he wound up doing. And other than tooting his horn, which he was amazing at, he winds up making a song that becomes one of the most peaceful songs of all times, you know?
What a wonderful world.
I mean, you hear that, and everybody just kind of stops in their tracks. And mm-hmm. how did that come about? And it's like Land Before Time. It just had something to it. It had, I guess you would say, you know, like especially in the Disney world, it had that magic, you know? And
well, I think they call things, you know, there's something called a tipping point, where all of a sudden, you know, you do something and you don't think it's that big of a deal, but it comes at a place in history or a place in time that resonates, and it resonates hugely with a lot of people, especially because of our communication. And I think with that, the when I did that in the 90s, you know, we were, I think people were at a place where it just came through the 70s and the 80s, which were me.
And
then all of a sudden, you know, you have this movie that's literally about these little guys, but it's community and it's working together, and it's caring about each other, and it's really tackling xenophobia. You know, we were coming out of the Cold War, and there was all this fear about, you know, people that you didn't know. And these movies were really about bringing, you know, people together. And though there were dinosaurs of different, you know, species of different, you know, different kinds of dinosaurs, they really talked about creating these new kinds of families. And I think it just really resonated with people.
It did.
It
resonated with us, that's for sure.
You know, because you're a single father raising a son, and these kinds of families weren't considered nuclear families for the longest time. And all of a sudden in the 90s, we start opening up to new ideas and new ways of being and new ways to create a family.
I was going to ask you about that. You've been in the business for a while, and you've seen the transition, and how did it affect you? What are you satisfied with the way things evolved? I suppose it's beneficial for sure, but how did it affect you when you're going along, you're a writer, you're involved in entertainment and so on, the transition to the tech age? I mean, that probably impacted you. It made you have to keep up with what's going on.
It made my head spin. It just made my head spin. How, and for me, how it affected me now is that I'm so excited. That's why I can't at my age think about retiring, because I am so excited about how everyone, young people, old people, middle-aged people, have the opportunity now to communicate. Look what's happened. There are people that have been discovered through YouTube. They say,
oh, yeah.
You know, they put their work on YouTube, and all of a sudden they're getting all these things, and they know they've got a record deal or a movie deal, or you know, they've got a film that they want to do, and they raise money online for it. I mean, these things were unheard of when you and I were coming up.
Exactly.
You had to get a big studio behind you. You had to get a patron behind you.
Well,
and
that's
now,
exactly.
And
yeah.
Raw talent. So that's why I think why it's so important to, you know, for us to keep up and to get on with the new media and what's going on with the internet.
Exactly. That's
because
what I wanted to get through. Yeah.
There's so much opportunity. And,
yourself. You know, Val, it's like Eric's movement, the easy way technology and everything he's involved with. It just seems to be like Larry Nehmer, the co-founder of E, was saying that he's taking this media to a different level.
Exactly.
People say doing it the easy way, what does that mean? It's like, wow, you're entering into a new world, and like you said, it makes people's head spin. And
oh, yeah,
I don't know about you, but I'm entering slowly. I'm like a dinosaur. I'm like your old movie with Land Before Time. I'm the dinosaur, you know, getting. But you have to really keep up, because some of your cartoons are no longer. You're taking a cartoon figure and blending it with a computerized image of somebody, and it's amazing. They look real. You can't tell the difference.
Yeah. Well, there's all, you know, in the old days it was rotoscoping, and then when I was living in South Korea, they were doing all kinds of work with, you know, putting electrodes all over the human body and then tracking those movements and then inputting it into the computer, so you have very authentic, working with 3D CGI, and all of a sudden this computer imaging is really capturing movement, and you could take the real deal, input it into the computer, and then the animators would animate over it, and you know, amazing. It's just amazing. I'm watching that and realizing, you know, we're going into
a new world.
Yeah.
What do you think of the easy way with the new technology and everything Eric has developed and all that? You've been to some of his events. What's your input?
I think that your son is amazing. I think he has his finger on the pulse of what is going on in new media, and I feel that it's a blessing that I met him.
It is amazing, and you know, I'm with him a lot, and I see people in meetings. They literally hold their head when he starts explaining all this stuff, and it's a new world. You know, it's not like it was. If you remember the '60s, it's so much different now. You know.
Mm-hmm. It's an inclusive. Before, we came up in an exclusive world. And
exactly.
He and Eric are making it inclusive. We can, anybody with the guts and the talent and the strength of commitment can do something now.
Exactly. Well, we're starting to wrap up here, and you know, again, I want to thank you for coming on, Deb, because like I say, you have quite an interesting past, and I know you've, you know, without your ideas, a lot of this stuff, we wouldn't be enjoying what we're watching. But I just want to touch base with everybody. Go to thewtv.com, and your stories, celebrities, the fun, the information, the interviews, there's so much. You connect with the fans. Like the Easy Way Broadcasting fan page, download Eric Zuli app. We got the Peace Fund games coming up, and Eric's going to be hosting that in December 6th and 7th. Val, I want you to come down there and do some paintballing with us, or at least watch the show.
Okay.
That'll be at Camp Pendleton. And then tune in to the Easy Show Talk Live Thursday at 10:30. Eric's guest is going to be... Do you remember, Val, the Adrian Paul from the Highlander?
Yep, I met him at one of the red carpet events.
Yeah, well, he's going to be his host. The EasyShow.com, the podcast, Accent Expo at the LA Convention Center, February 28th and 29th. Dev, I'll tell you, I don't know how you keep up with it. I'm trying to do it, but what a schedule. And, you know, we run into each other at some of these events, and you turn around, and all of a sudden a year goes by. It's like, what the heck's happening here? And the Easy Way Broadcasting, powered by WTV Networks, will be hosting a series of contests and opportunities, too. So, Deb, my dear, it's been a pleasure, and thank you again and again for coming on, and hope to be running into you again. Maybe I'll see you at Paul Event coming up here soon.
Okay, you just may be.
Deb Ross, everyone, and we'll call it a day, and we'll see you next week.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Finally, something to look forward to on Monday morning. I'm Retha Gray from Betty White's Off Their Rockers, and I've teamed up with Easy's dad, Jim Zuli, to rock your world on Baby Boomers Live. That's right, every Monday morning at 10 a.m., we will be discussing all things human from a baby boomer's perspective. So, tune in to EasyWayBroadcasting.com on BlogTalkRadio.com to see what Jim and I are up to. Your Mondays will never be the same. Thank you for listening to Baby Boomers Live with your hosts, Retha Gray, star Betty White's Out There Rockers, and Easy's dad, Jim Zuli. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and keep up with us at babyboomerslive.info. Baby Boomers Live, brought to you by EasyWayBroadcasting.com on Blog Talk Radio.